Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another great episode of Hashtag My Investing Story. We have Doug Gerlach here as our special guest. Right now, it's just me. I think Ann is going to join us a little later. But Doug is, you know, Doug, I don't have your bio, so I'm not even going to try to fake that. I'm not even going to try to fake to read it.
Yeah.
So let's jump in. Most of your story is going to come out in, in the conversation. I think we said we were going to talk books and beer before we talk about your story a little bit. If you don't know, you'll find out Doug is a what do you call it? Beer aficionado?
a heavy drinker, I think. No, I am a big craft beer aficionado. When I travel, I like to experience craft breweries around the world. So I've got a huge database of beers that I've tried and sampled and styles and preferences and breweries. So it just makes travel a little more interesting. I don't consume a lot, but
right.
I consume a lot quantity wise, but a lot of different styles. I like doing tastings at breweries. That's but that hobby has sort of taken the back seat during the pandemic a little bit. But you mentioned books, and I also read quite a bit. For the last decade, I've read about 250 to 350 books a year. Again, because I travel quite extensively, so it allows me lots of downtime. Don't watch a lot of television. Don't watch really any television. And so I'm always interested in the classics and contemporary books and fiction and nonfiction and how to. I think all of that information that you collect just contributes to the work that you do and the life that you live. And I know that Charlie Munger, who's Warren Buffett's partner, Berkshire Hathaway, is a big proponent of reading the classics and reading books and doing work that he finds helps him to be a better investor, which is really kind of interesting. But yeah, books and beer, and I love travel as well. And then there's the whole money side, the day job, as it were.
Right. So one more thing on books. We were talking a little bit before the show. Well, let me start by saying my birthday was January 31st. So anybody that wants to remember that and get me a present next year, that's the only reason I'm telling you this. But this is the start of February. And so you have some books on your list for Black History Month. You want to share?
Yeah. Yeah. As Black History Month, it's just a good opportunity to queue up some books that have been on my to-be-read list. And my to-be-read list is hundreds and hundreds of books long. I always find new books to add to it, but I've been pulling out a couple of books and loading onto my Kindle some titles from authors about the Black experience by Black authors. James Baldwin is at the top of the list right now. I've read a number of his books, so I've added a few more. Zora Neale Hurston as well, who when I first read a couple of years ago, I was surprised at how modern her books were. So I've got a couple of her books on. There was a new biography of Malcolm X that was released, or that actually won the National Book Award for Nonfiction a couple of years ago. So there is, so much work being done. And then you've got Colson Whitehead. So lots of authors. It's very exciting. And I find that when you read these experiences and group them together, it gives you a little more insight into how other people look at the world and view the world. So those are some of my, that's my objective for February on the reading side.
Excellent. Okay. So now that people get a chance to experience Doug, the human being, not Doug, the tax printer expert, iClub Central guy. Doug, where did you grow up, and what were your first experiences of money? Was money talked about in the home, or did you pick up some lessons, good or bad, just by watching your surroundings?
Yeah, I grew up in central Pennsylvania, was born in Columbus, Ohio. My dad was attending Ohio State University at the time, was just graduated a month after I was born, in fact, with a degree in poultry science. And my mother was a beautician. And we moved a couple of times. We moved to North Carolina for a few years, where I went to kindergarten and first grade and picked up that Southern accent that the my northern relatives love to make fun of. But then we landed in central Pennsylvania, south central Pennsylvania, not too far from Gettysburg, little small town atmosphere. My family, my parents were, my father's family was farmers. My mother's family was, again, they grew up in a two-room house with four or five brothers and sisters for a time, and then moved to a slightly bigger home. So very much from a rural, lower class upbringing. And my dad was fairly successful with his business, and we lived a comfortable middle-class life, but money was not something that we really talked about. I did have a bank account early on, a savings account that I was charged with, keeping the, you know, the few dollars in there that I would receive at, you know, the $2 bill I would get it for my birthday from my grandparents, and put that money into the passbook. It was nothing that we really talked about. I can remember in junior high school, at one point I was already being tracked into the college class track. Some of the other classes were receiving instruction on how to balance a checkbook and how to write a check. And some of my classmates wanted to know why we didn't have to learn this stuff. We thought this might be useful skills to have. And we're told, oh, you're smart enough to figure it out on your own. And that may or may not be the case, but I think that's just indicative of a trend over the last 30, 40, 50 years where we don't talk about personal finance at home. We don't talk about it in schools. We don't teach people basics of money management, not even when you get to investing and learning how to invest money, which is, you know, one of the big attractions of better investing, as you and Ann know. Bringing those that information to people for whom it was long thought wouldn't be interested in it or didn't have the skills for it,
have the opportunity or the money it's not for you.
Absolutely, that's, you know, the better investing origin story I find fascinating. That you know, a few people said it's just not right that all of these auto workers in the Detroit area and plumbers couldn't start investing in the stock market a little bit at a time because no brokers would talk to them. And so the concept of an investment club really came out of that desire to see more people invested in the capitalist movement and putting their money to work for the betterment of themselves as well as the broader business of the states. And by the time we got to when I started investing in the 1990s, that was still an issue. This is pre-internet. So I have experience with dealing with brokers back in the day where you called on the phone and you pressed the buttons to enter your orders and get your account balance. Automated brokerage services was all the rage. So we've come so far. And I'm happy to have been part of that journey helping people to learn about investing in the market. We're getting ahead of the timeline here because I think you want me to go back to my childhood.
I'll lead you. And I, you know, interesting, and I know I caught it. I don't know about anybody else, but I don't think we really realized because I actually also studied education at school. And not just education, but education of blacks from pre-Civil War to 1965. And what a lot of people don't recognize or realize, I think it may be there, but, you know, people aren't saying it, is that a lot of times we get tracked. You know, so you were tracked for college. Other people are tracked to be line workers. And so taking that idea of were you tracked, most of us were, we don't know that we are, but, you know, if you had the opportunity to go to private school or if you had to go to public school, if you were in advanced classes or not in advanced classes, you were tracked. You know, you were tracked to be a professional, you're tracked to be a blue collar worker. And I think that being aware of that can help you to see the other options available to you, because exactly taking it to the origin story of Better Investing, you know, you have a group of guys saying, why can't the auto mechanics and the plumbers to opportunities they were not professionally tracked for? And yeah, that's how you get the formation of investment clubs. And you also, not just the formation, but it's the value and the benefit, because at the end of the day, what we've learned in Better Investing is that anybody can do it. It's just, you know, you taking the initiative to recognize that I probably wasn't tracked to learn this stuff, or I probably wasn't tracked to get a career in high finance or investment banking, or, you know, work at a teller, but I can access an organization or utilize some resources to be able to still, you know, grow my portfolio and my network over time. So thank you for sharing that, because I do think that was important to bring up. What did you, you know, after, you know, childhood, you went to school, you studied what, you started working in what, as what?
Yes, yes. What a leading question that is. I in high school was not interested in classwork, but was interested in all the extracurricular activities. And that included, I was editor of the newspaper when I was a junior. I was on the debate team, the speech team, in the marching band, in the orchestra, acted in all the plays and musicals. I was just spent so much time at school doing my own thing. And when I went off to college, I thought, well, I'm going to study something really practical, either literature or acting or theater. And I was shortly after getting to college, within the first year, I decided that I would major in drama, that was really where my passion at the time lied. Continued to study literature. I was always interested in communication and language and words, whether you're writing or speaking, acting on stage, acting in productions. But in my emphasis in majoring in drama was not acting. I actually majored in set design and directing. And I directed several productions in college and graduated with a degree in drama, Bachelor of Arts degree in drama, came to New York City and promptly worked off-Broadway as a carpenter for a time, living in the East Village in the 1980s, and slowly kind of worked my way up to working at a nonprofit Broadway theater in the fundraising department, and then landed a job at Lincoln Center for the theater company at Lincoln Center doing grant writing. So again, this is bringing my interest in writing and language together with my interest in theater, so that was where I was working in the 1990s, and then took another little slight detour, started getting interested in emerging technology that would support arts administration. And so at both of the last two theaters that I worked on teams that were automating our processes and incorporating computer technologies and networks. So I was learning about computer technology as we headed into the 1990s, and lo and behold, all of a sudden, there's this thing called the internet. There are these message boards called America Online and CompuServe and Prodigy, where people are dialing up and talking about different topics. So I had this interest in technology from a personal point of view that I was using that interest at work going to my job every day and writing grants for the government and corporations and foundations to fund our theater and our projects, living in Manhattan. So, being a young professional, but just happened to be in the theater business. And then every, you know, several times a week, we would go to see different shows, go to the theater. So that was very much, he was very engaged with that and with alumni from my college. But that's when things took a little bit of a turn when a coworker of mine at the theater company brought a clipping from the New York Times and put it on my desk. It was a story about investment clubs. And this was in 1993, I believe. And she put the clipping on my desk and said, we should start one of these. And what she really meant was, you should start one of these for us, Doug. But she knew. She had it. She had my number. She knew that this was something that I was ripe to take on. And I went, investment club? What is that? Read the article. Again, it's about some working class men in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who've been in an investment club and how successful they had been over time and how anyone could do it. And you just needed to call this company in Michigan, this National Association of Investors, and they would send you a packet and you could get on your way. So I promptly called them on the phone and they said, yep, we'll get it to you. It's probably going to be about 6 weeks or 2 months. To get that packet of information about how to start a club. So in the meantime, while I was waiting for that, I decided, well, there's got to be something on these new online computer networks. There's got to be some place to talk about it. And promptly went on CompuServe and found the National Association of Investors had a volunteer-run group on the CompuServe message board system. And I went, oh, this is really interesting. And of course, we're connected at this. You won't be familiar with this, Ione, but it was at 2400 baud computer connection. So this is text that's dribbling down to your computer. It's tying up the phone line while you're online, while you're on connected to this computer network. No one can call into you. They get a busy signal. But 6 hours later, I had reams of documents and text files that I downloaded about people talking about stocks and investment clubs and how to start a club and what you should be looking at in your club and this thing called the stock selection guide. What's that? This is how you can analyze stocks. Okay, I can figure this out. So I really did take the lead in starting my investment club. And over time, we got together a core group of 15 people connected to the theater industry in many cases and friends of friends. And we would meet and started putting our money together. And I took the lead and said, well, somebody's got to guide this group. Somebody's got to come up with the instruction that will keep everyone on track. So I continued to participate online, ask questions on the CompuServe forum. And within a few months, I'm not just asking questions, I'm answering questions because I've received the knowledge, I've incorporated, I've learned it, and now I'm helping other people, I'm passing it along. I found that to be very fulfilling. And with any endeavor where you're participating as a volunteer you're active and you're engaged, the people running that forum, the volunteers running that forum said, hey, why don't you take on a more formal role and every month lead a discussion on the stock to study in the Better Investing magazine. And so we did the first online stock selection guides back in the 1990s, where we looked at the data. Everyone made a consensus judgment about the projection of growth rates, the selection of PE ratios, and we'd set our buy zones. And you had all this knowledge and this insight and input, and people could go do additional research and would have different perspectives and bring it all together. And so we were doing this in public so anyone could follow along. And then we'd archive those discussions so you could go back later and just read. And it's all just text. I mean, the whole thing is text. But it was very gratifying to me to be to be involved in it. And I just thought it was terrific. And so before you know it, the internet has arrived. So now we've got this thing called the World Wide Web. What is this? I'm thinking, but this sounds really cool. So start exploring that. And start my first homepage. So I had And I started collecting some of the documentation that I had written, articles I had written for my club and for the online forum, started writing more stock studies. And I wrote a tutorial to this thing called the Stock Selection Guide, and published that. And so this is back in 1995, 96. Started adding links to all these cool financial sites that I'd found. And, you know, we're talking about dozens of sites, and that was the entirety of the information that was available at the time. But I started adding and building out a website that was content and resources. And so by 1995, this is months after the internet is really kind of rolling out and grabbing hold of the mindset of people with these new personal computers. I was publishing these articles. I was invited to write some stock studies for one of Better Investing's newsletters, their computer group newsletter. So I started doing those. I put those on my website as well. And before you know it, I had a website, a real website with a domain name called Investorama, and was being seen.
Yeah, I remember Investorama.
Yeah, being seen as someone who was at the forefront of this internet investing revolution. And because I had content there, people see that I could write, because I had hundreds and hundreds of links categorized so that if you wanted to know about a particular topic like technical analysis or fundamental analysis, you could come to that section and I would give you all the relevant links, the most relevant links that I found. And a book publisher contacted me and said, great website. We've got an idea to put together a book about investing online. Would you like to write it? And I said, well, I could do that. Right? I write for a living professionally in another field. I have this awareness of technology and this understanding of it. I'm out here all the time. You know, every day now I'm online, I'm answering questions, I'm corresponding. Yeah, I can write that. So I got a book contract to write a book. And so I'm still working my day job, and I would come home and work on the book. And then, you know, as these things escalate, I was introduced to someone who worked for an investing magazine and on the technology side. And they said, oh, we'll introduce you to the editors because you've got a book contract. And so they said, oh, you've got a book contract. How would you like to do some freelance writing? And I said, sure. I'd be happy to do some freelance writing. So all of a sudden I went from having a little homepage to a website, to collecting advertising on the website, to having a book contract, to now being a freelance writer as well. And it was only a matter of time. By 1997, I was offered a job at an investment bank to help develop an online broker. It was a full service investment bank, but they were wanted to develop an online broker. So I was hired to come in to be the content director, essentially the editorial director for that effort. 6 months after they hired me, they decided that the brokers hated this idea of people being able to go online and click a button and buy and sell stocks and not have to go
without
to them.
Them.
What's going to happen to their commission? So the company backed off. So they said, we want you to keep working for us. So I did for a while, for another 6 months, but then I went off to work for iVillage, which at the time, the Women's Network. And this was before they went public. To work on their financial property, a financial website that they owned as part of their greater network called the Armchair Millionaire. So from there, I was the editor of the content of the armchairmillionaire.com website. And then we wrote another book. Then I got another contract to write a complete idiot's guide to online investing. So I wrote that. Then I got another contract to write Investment Clubs for Dummies. I spent much of the late 90s just writing content, churning out content, freelancing. I wrote about online investing for computer magazines like PC World, and I wrote about computer technology for financial magazines. Had a lot of media profile, a lot appeared on television, a number of times on CNN, FN, and in magazines like Business Week and Forbes. So really kind of cemented my position as an educator, as somebody who was navigating this wild and woolly world of online investing and helping people to understand the options that were available to them and make sense of it. And if this wasn't all enough, in 1995, the volunteer computer group at Better Investing, then known as NAIC, decided that they wanted a website. And they went to the NAIC management and said, everybody's getting a website. You should get a website. And management at the time said, well, maybe this is just going to be a fad. It's going to pass. This internet thing, you know, maybe it's not all it's cracked up to be. We don't really see the value in it. But apparently at a board meeting, the trustees came back to management and said, are we going to get a website? And management was able to say, well, as a matter of fact, yes, we've been talking with our computer volunteers about this very topic. And so the next day they rang me up and said, Doug, would you build the website? And so I created, with some technical assistance from another volunteer, we created the first Better Investing website. Then we recruited a group of volunteers to update the content and build out a network. And so we did that for the first few years. And then finally, Better Investing said, okay, it looks like this web thing is going to stick around for a while. And they brought it all in-house. But so it not only started Investorama, which someone asked, is that still around? And no, that was subsumed into other initiatives a long time ago. But I started that website. Then I started the Better Investing website. I started a number of other websites, including a website called about investment clubs called iClubCentral.com.
The one that's still around now.
No, it's not. It's a different website. But that website, so iClubCentral.com, for those of you who don't know, the company I work for now is iClub Central Incorporated, which is a subsidiary of Better Investing. But iClub Central was a website that I created that was just investment club content. But I wanted to get away from websites and running websites. So in 2000 or so, I actually sold that to a startup company that was starting a business to support investment clubs. So I sold the website to them gave them a license to all the content.
Was that Vivian?
No, it was another company run by Robert Brooker, who later was on. So Robert bought the domain from me. And about 3 or 4 months later, they said, well, our business is so investment club focused, we wanted to rebrand. And we decided to use iClub Central as the company name. So they used the name that I created for the business. And then 3 or 4 years after that, we hooked up again and they said, we need someone in management of the investment club business that we're putting together. And by that point, I had been through the freelance route, decided I didn't like it. And so went to work in 2004, went to work for iClub Central Incorporated, the business that had the name of the website that I created back in the 1990s.
So you had an idea, you created it, you
yep.
sold it to Brooker. Brooker
yep.
built it, grew it. Brought you back in to run it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, So you can see it's just this long, circuitous path.
It's a small world.
Just intertwined. And that's why we're nice to people. You know, you should be nice to people and respectful because you never know where it's all going to come back and how your reputation will help you. As I said, so through 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, I was freelance writing. I was a consulting editor for Mutual Funds Magazine, published by Time Life Publications, covering online finance, working on a book for Better Investing. I wrote their online computer investing book, continuing to get out there and educate. And from 1996 through 2003, I was actually a national volunteer for Better Investing at the time, NAIC, on their computer group board. So I started attending the conferences and making presentations and then traveling to chapters around the country to give presentations to the various chapters. So that was, again, after presentations, I would often mention to people that I had a drama degree, and the reaction was, oh, now it makes sense. Now, oh, we get it. Okay, good. So I was able to use those skills to hopefully build a pathway to communicating ideas, communicating complex ideas about investing, show people that if I can do it, you can do it. You know, I don't have a business degree.
Literally.
I don't have a finance degree. I don't have an accounting degree. I've learned these things by reading, right, by studying. I've used my experience with the classics to understand how people work and how business works. And I think it all comes together at the end of the day.
When did you officially leave theater? I mean, the theater business, because, I mean, you just took us through it keeping you up late at night to, I mean, all the freelance work, the writing work. I mean, when did you decide to, you know, cut your ties in a sense?
Ione, one never truly leaves the theater.
This is true.
But seriously, in 1997 is when I said goodbye to theater as a daytime job. I left theater to work for an investment bank. And I said, well, if this investment banking thing doesn't work out, I'll always have theater to fall back on, which is the inverse of what people
usually say.
Exactly. You know, they go to school, they get a degree in economics, and then they're going to pursue their dream to be an artist. And if all else fails, they can go back and get a job in the business world. Went from it, but I never looked back. To me, all that creativity that I really treasured when I was in high school and college and beyond, the ability to string a series of words together on paper or to communicate ideas, and the creative urges that fuel all of that, that's still what drives me from day to day. And the webinars that I do, the presentations that I do, sitting down with a PowerPoint feels creative. It's not a business. It's not something putting together a business proposal. It's really trying to find the best way to communicate ideas about topics that people are often apprehensive about. Yeah,
yeah,
so we got to 1993, mm-hmm. 1994, which takes me to where I am now, essentially,
right?
Where I went to work for iClub Central, which was a little startup that was acquiring software that support investment clubs and individual investors and better investing members. From there, so that's what I've been doing essentially since then, officially since March of 2004, really. Just continuing to roll out products, roll out new ideas, and add features and functionality to our tools for investment clubs and individual investors. And I'm very proud of the products that we've launched, but I'm also proud of the newsletter, the Small Cap Informer newsletter that I started back in 2012. I mean, the time just keeps plugging along. And the other newsletter that I edit and work with the team of analysts is the Investor Advisory Service. Both those newsletters have been outperforming the market, and they use the Better Investing Approach, which I think speaks to the strength of the Better Investing methods of analyzing stocks, that it does work. And you put them in the hands of professionals who really know what they're doing, and it works really well. But anybody can do it. That's the big advantage of it.
You know, I think you're one of the not just most experienced, but I guess in short, you're probably the best person I could ask this question because of your entry into technology and investing and investing clubs. I mean, you really were there at the beginning. And it's so interesting because, you know, you were younger at that time. It was new.
Always
and...
got to bring in the age difference, doesn't she?
You know, I couldn't get away from that.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, we met in the 90s, so I'm not as young in either. But the point is, I mean, we've watched literally in 20, almost 30 years, we've watched the world of investing change, right?
Yeah.
Like when I got started, Dean Witter was at the end of Morgan Stanley, right?
Right.
Like you said, you used to have to call up and, you know, punch in your order. And then you have the internet. Maybe if you could do a short timeline, and I'm saying this because there are books that people are reading that are old, but still have new old, but still have good. I mean, we used to popularize drip. It's now termed automatic investment. My stock fund was new. Now everybody has that arm. So if you can, you know, from the top of your head, kind of walk us through that kind of like archaic dinosaur to upright man timeline. Because I think it is fascinating. I mean, my first stock, I sent in a check to Better Investing and tore out the low cost investment plan. You know,
yeah.
So, and I think that that's really cool for people to see and hear, but also just recognize what's now available to them.
Yeah. Well, there have certainly been a lot of changes, and that's probably what's alarming about today, 2022. In the markets, some of the trends that we're seeing, you know, back in the 1990s, the early 1990s, you know, the idea of a computerized broker was really unique. You know, I can recall in the early 90s, Schwab had software, so you would get it on a floppy disk, you would install it on your computer, and then it would kind of create a terminal with text that you could access information, very little graphical about it. And then, you know, gradually this whole World Wide Web concept came on board with graphics and other elements. But it's true, at the time in the 90s, there was a big surge of interest because all of a sudden you didn't have to feel stupid by going to a broker saying, I don't know anything about money. But I want to invest, right? And people are resistant to doing that. But when you can take away the chance that you're going to be judged for wanting to learn and for exposing what you don't know, and you can figure it out on the internet and dribs and drabs and pieces and articles, and you can connect with people, and it's a lot different. You don't feel quite as stupid to ask an anonymous person on the internet. If you found the right community, you can reach out. And that's what we had. There was Better Investing always had that community element where people would say, oh, I can't join an investment club. I don't know anything about investing. And every club that I know says, that's exactly right. That's exactly why you should join our investment club. We all remember what it was like, and we accept and embrace people who have the same experiences that you had, and we're going to help you to find your way a little bit. And so the internet had that promise. Today, there's a whole lot of forums telling people, you know, why they should be investing in meme stocks and cryptocurrency. It was always there, this level of complication about investing in the markets and investing in different types of securities and using complicated complicated strategies or using highly software dependent methods of analyzing charts and trends. But you know, the basics of investing have always been the same. And I feel here we are 25 years after I started trying to help people to understand, no, business is really not that hard. If you make money and you do it on a consistent basis, the value of your enterprise goes up. If you know nothing else about investing other than that, that's all you need to know. Everything else is speculation after that point. Yeah, and sometimes companies that had been consistently making money stop making as much money or don't lose their way. But the best of the best continue to plug through. Yeah, their earnings are down slightly. They didn't grow as much as they did last year. But the best American businesses continue and they find ways to thrive. And that's what we try to determine what those businesses are. So, you know, I think the role today of the internet, you know, I hate to say it, I think it should be censored, but a lot of people have no business trying to, you know, to invest the way that they're doing it now. I just feel like people are still taking that gambling mentality. It's really enabled when it's kind of point and click instead of being more thoughtful about things. So I've always been a proponent of technology as a tool. I can't see how I would invest without using a computer and software to analyze companies and to get company research. Again, back in the 1990s, in my investment club, in my personal portfolio, when I wanted to learn about a company, I would write them a letter. Dear Investor Relations, could you please send me a copy of your most recent annual report, 10K and 10Q filings? Thank you very much. And, you know, 6 weeks later, you get an envelope and you look at this information and you go, this is really great. If I'd known this 2 months ago, I could have, when the information was current, I might have actually been able to make a good decision. But again, focus on the long term. Focus on the long term. It's not about the short term gains. So, you know, that same amount of information that would take, or I would go to the library in Manhattan, to the New York Public Library. And you would have to check out a section of Value Line at a time. On a Saturday morning, you would put your name. I want section number 11, please. And so you put your name on the list, and then you'd go wait, you know, and then 10 minutes later, they say, Mr. Gerlach, you go up and you get, and I take it back and I make photocopies of what I wanted and look through it and like take it back and say, now I'd like section 12. Okay. Put your name on the list, go off, wander the stacks. And that's what we did. And that was a big step forward from the way that people were doing it in the 60s and 70s, where that was even not an option for many people. So the fact that I can go online now and in the matter of a few hours have more information that I could ever fully utilize.
Yeah.
But you develop the skill of parsing what's important and what's not important. Understanding the approach really helps. So that you don't get hung up on the negatives that someone has to say, because they're looking at the 3 week time frame of a particular company's progress. I don't care what happens to the company in the next 3 weeks. I'm not trying to prejudge their earnings results. I'm looking at their potential after the next crisis, whatever it is, bull market, bear market, recession, recovery. I'm looking to see how they're going to be. What shape they're likely to be in a few years down the road. And one of the members of my, I joined an online investment club at the time, or mm-hmm. back in the 90s as well. And one of the members was, you know, 75 years old, retired. And he kept coming in with these small cap stocks. It's like, the long term looks great on this one. That's right. You know, that's it. That's it. He wasn't cashing out. He wasn't moving to safety. He was looking and just excited about those small company stocks and their long-term potential, because that's what put him in the position that he was in, able to retire and living comfortably.
Yeah, I have to say this before I ask you my next question. You know, the better investing community has been, I would say, the first, if not only, community I've ever known full of vibrant, engaged, forward-looking old people. I mean, if you let them, they'll be 88 with a 20-year time horizon. Like, you know, just so comfortable. And the reason I say it like that is because, you know, when I talk to some other people who are in their 40s, they're already saying it's too late. They're already saying, oh, well, I'm 10 or 15 years away from retirement. I should be conservative, you know, and they, but it's all because they don't know, you know, it's all because they haven't been taught. They haven't, you know, they don't know anybody else that knows.
Right.
And I had a recent conversation with someone who's in their 40s this past week. And it finally dawned on me that, you know, when most people are looking at their, you know, retirement accounts, 401ks, whatever the case may be, they misunderstand the word aggressive.
Yeah.
And I just realized, I think it's a scare tactic.
Yeah.
Because that aggressive is not trading. It's not, I forget the other word I want. It's not speculation.
Right. Right.
And unfortunately, a lot of people are missing out because of the wrong word association.
Yeah.
And yeah.
There still is a lot of fear that a lot of people have. Part of this is the conventional wisdom, which people fall back on. It's been, you know, the rules that have been handed down over time that impact the way that people think about money. Has always been, you know, we're going to work till you get your retirement at 65, and then you're going to live on Social Security after that. And, you know, when Social Security was developed in the 1930s, 65, there were very few people who made it that far. It was really meant to be the safety net for the very elderly and infirm. Today, people routinely live to 75 to 80 years old. So even if you start at 50 years, you've got 30 years that you can be putting your money to work for you. Even if you're not adding capital to it, you can still be having that money work for you. There's no reason to give up. And so that shift takes a long time to be incorporated in how people think. Excuse me. And then you have a whole business, the financial business, that doesn't want people to adopt new ways of thinking, that wants you to think that stocks are risky, you know, but we can help you with that. Right. And that messaging hasn't changed. We can connect you with a personal advisor who will help you make those hard decisions instead of having to figure it out for yourself. And that's not to say it's not a viable option for a lot of people, but more people could be doing it on their own in a sensible way, investing on their own, investing for retirement, investing to reach their goals in a sensible way that has the higher risk, according to Wall Street's definition, because they don't define risk the same way that people do. And so we could certainly be looking at it. You know, our Investor Advisory Service newsletter that I edit was the top performing newsletter in the United States in 2021. 53-something% return. Phenomenal results. So, we're going to talk about it. We think it's kind of neat to be the number one, but we're really more impressed that we have the best any newsletter that has consistently beat up and down markets since 2000. That's more important to us, that we've got 21 years where not only did we outperform every bull and every bear market cycle, but we have the best performance of any newsletter that did that. That's really cool. So yeah, we've got the short-term gains. Yeah, that's nice. Well, you know, we're very happy about it, but we're happier about the boring fact that in 21 years, we have a great track record of almost doubling the broader market averages with our stock picks, right? And so, but when you look at our risk-adjusted returns, according to Wall Street, you're really taking a lot of risk by investing according to our style. Because we're all in equities, we're all in stocks all the time. But again, if you accept the risk, we're not going to put you in a company that's going to go bankrupt or that's going to, you know, we do have stocks that decline 50%. But, you know, you'll have plenty of notice to readjust your portfolio if there's severe likelihood of really terrible things happening. When you're investing in companies and focusing on the company, companies don't overnight
go out of business.
Like yeah. That. The only reason they do is because of fraud. And, you know, we go back and look at companies like Enron. And the question is, well, how come, you know, look at all those investment clubs who owned Enron. Oh, that's not the question. Look at all the mutual funds and professional advisors who owned Enron. If they're the ones who are supposed to be protecting their customers' portfolios, why were they invested in Enron so heavily? So it's definitely I think that, you know, again, I think that anybody can invest in the market. There's no time that where you're too old or too young to get started. I'll remind you, Ione, that I went for a 3-mile run in the 27 degree temperature last night. So next time I see you, we can go for a run together, so that you know how us old people are navigating, these tough times.
Well, I just want to say, because I did have some people come down my neck in the chat about making them feel, and again, I don't say it to make you all feel old. I actually feel,
there's no right way
to say this, but
Ione,
I actually feel very good. Because
there was a time, we've just talked about the time when I was the young, interesting guy. I have a comment here that I found. I've been cleaning out papers. I found a comment from the late 90s, early 2000s from a volunteer from the Washington, D.C. chapter. And he sent an email to our forum after he had met me at an event. And he was like, because when you're online, you don't know. We're all just names. And you could figure out who was smart and who maybe wasn't so smart just by the context of the conversation.
So
he posted afterwards, what a pleasure it was to meet Doug. You know, I've been following him online for all these years now. We've been communicating on the forums, and I expected this, you know, wise, gray-haired gentleman, and he's a darn kid. I was in my 30s, but it's like, wow, did not expect that one. So, I had my day.
Having mine.
Well, not for very much longer,
you.
Apparently.
No, clearly not.
Every day that goes by, Ione.
We all get older.
I saw Howard ask how old was Toolkit, the Investors Toolkit program.
It
was the early 1990s.
Out.
Yeah, I think it was 91, 93, something like that, the very first version. There were Mac and Windows versions, actually.
Was it a Toolkit version without the one? And then...
There was a DOS program that NEIC actually released. There was a program that was built externally, and then there was one that they built in house that they hired people to build a DOS program in the late 1980s. And then Toolkit was developed in the 1990s. There was another program, Stock Analyst. And so all these programs came together at iClub by the early 2000s. So I was a user and teacher of those programs. I wasn't involved with Toolkit until version 5, and then version 6 was the last version, was the one that I was the product manager for. And now we are in the process of retiring that program. This is interesting, again, the connectedness of being part of a broader community and being a volunteer meant that I was able to meet and to develop a relationship with a volunteer who was before my time in the 80s, who was developed some of those early software, the online investing software that Better Investing had. So he in the 80s was pushing the boundaries and saying, we can do this. If you're doing all this math, it can be done on a computer in this tool. And so later he subscribed to the newsletters, and I would meet him at conferences, and we had a great relationship. And I think he felt like I was carrying forward the same precepts that he believed in, that software and technology were aimed to democratize further the message of the organization and to support people and to make it all happen. It's not about bells and whistles and flash and instant access so much as there's a convenience to it, but the ability to study a stock and do a stock selection guide and visually incorporate the trends and develop an understanding of a business that comes from that sort of visualization of data, I think is really interesting and really cool. And again, if I can do it, someone who's not an engineer, calculus was my downfall in high school. I almost didn't graduate because of calculus, right? We had issues, mathematics and myself. So the fact that later I was able to do some rudimentary programming and be seen as a technology person. Yes, I understand technology. I use it, but my skill is communicating and teaching people how to use this technology from a humanistic point of view.
And I think that's why my iClub and Better Investing Tools overall is great. Because exactly what you said, the people behind it are approaching it from a humanistic point of view. I also have to take this opportunity to say, because we didn't get into detail about it, but, you know, coming in late 90s into BI, the computer group and
yes.
I know CompuFest was just one of the key factors in me understanding and learning, you know, this information. So I just want to do a virtual shout out and thank you to all those that played a role in that capacity during that time, because I just know that those group of people, you included, you know, really were at the head of integrating compute. Because I remember, I mean, CompuFest was like the only conference that actually had a computer lab there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, an open computer lab. You would come in, you would ask questions, you could get on it. And I just remember that, you know, being so warm and welcoming and down to earth to really help you get it, because most of us didn't have computers in our home yet.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, BI volunteers being able to kind of lead that way and helping us to move from paper and colored pencils to inputting value line, literally.
Yeah, it's amazing to reminisce about those early CompuFest in the 1990s and the computer labs. And I can remember sitting with one of the other volunteers on the floor in a hotel ballroom trying to get our computers to connect to CompuServe so that we could go online, and we didn't have the right codes, and we had to have the right program in the right numbers to get an outside line to make the connection. But the computer labs were always great. And again, this is one of the great advantages of the Better Investing community when you interact with them, is that people are willing to give and to help and support, and you could sit down. And you would have people coming in there with their notebooks, with their questions ready to go. And they would sit down and talk to a volunteer and show me that again. Now, can I try it and click through and understand it? And you really felt like that was something that they would take back then and show the rest of their club members. And it really had that feel of spreading virally in a very good way. All of the knowledge that was being passed along and at those events. So, yeah, I look back on those times and those conferences as really terrific enterprises to support the bigger mission. You know, and again, in the 1995 Congress, which is the National Convention was known at the time, was when we released the Better Investing website. And so the computer lab was a tiny room and it was packed. And I was literally in there making changes, you know, in between when people were coming out. We were fixing things and finding problems. I made the whole website in Notepad, and I would FTP the files up to the server. But I would be adding, you know, getting more information. We were right up to the last minute. But it was a real thrill to be part of that environment. This is one of those big, back when those conventions would have, you know, 2,000 people at them. So it was a big, felt like an important event, but you still got that home
yeah.
connection quality to it.
Exactly. Well, one of my last questions for you, Doug, and I think that you're one of the perfect people to ask this, is how do you handle too much information?
Yeah.
And I'm saying that from the perspective of, like, right now we talked about the history of the internet, the progress of the democratization of information to help you make better investment decisions. But we are coming from a time where when you could get online and you did search for investing and investment club stuff, you got a higher quality of information, advice, resources, and you were more likely to find NAIC Now Better Investing. Now, there's so much out there that if you search those same terms, you're going to get everything else. Like you talked about meme stocks, we're much harder to find. And with people now becoming new and beginner investors, how do they really handle just so much information? And I say that really too because, you know, you're an editor on one IAS, you know, you write and edit the Small Cap Informer. So just even your own day job, you are consuming a lot of investment information. And I'm not sure, I mean, because we haven't really talked about your own personal investing practices, but sometimes people live in this world and they have not yet brought it home. You know, they could talk a good game, yeah, but no. You know, if you would look at their own little portfolio, it would be, as my mom says, the cobbler's child has no
yes.
shoes.
Well, you know, so. I would like everyone to know that all of the individual stocks that I own right now are covered in the Small Cap Informer. And we have a policy that I can't preload. I can't buy a stock and then recommend it. So and my practice is wait some time after. And as often happens, whenever I recommend a stock, then it proceeds to go down a little bit more. Right. But we don't worry about the timing so much because of our time frame. So I'm heavily weighted in small and mid-cap stocks. In my 401k, it's all I'm using the same strategy that I wrote about in The Armchair Millionaire that I co-wrote. So it's a 3 index fund strategy. So I very much utilize the practice what I preach for sure. I think that, again, stock studies, which is what I do, essentially. I write the 2 stock studies a month. Some months in the past, I've had some assistance on them. But, you know, going back to 2012, we're up to 9 years, 2 stocks a month, 12 months. That's a lot of stock studies. That's a lot of stock studies to write about, present in SSG, and then write about them. And so it's forced me, because you've only got 2 pages, to crystallize what's important. And I think the evolution in my own understanding of the better investing approach is we can make this even simpler. We can eliminate stuff that is really, for the most part, not as relevant. There have been a lot of economic changes to the way companies operate. When you're in decades and decades of low interest rate environments, debt is not as big a concern as it used to be. For back in, you know, when interest rates were much, much, much higher for much longer. But, you know, there are shortcuts that we learned that if you find a well-managed business that has profit margins that are better than competitors, you don't have to worry about their debt loads because management's taking care of it. You don't have to worry about the fundamental strength of the business or the insider ownership or some of the other elements that are there for review. Focus on how well management is making money by doing what they do for the business. And that's profit margin analysis. And you can compare apples to apples very easily. Compare one company to another company and boom, there you go. One company is not making as much per dollar of sales. You want to understand why. Is it because they've got a lot of high labor costs? Is it because one firm is importing more product? Because one company has better options on the raw materials that they utilize? So there's a lot of that that comes with experience, but you can benefit. Anybody can benefit by reading Better Investing Magazine. I don't want to make a sales pitch for the Small Cap Informer, but this is
no,
where I practice what I preach.
No,
and
it's time to plug in all the links.
I think that, you know, the newsletters that, you know, the Investor Advisory Service was started in 1973 by Better Investing. Better Investing divested it in 2003 to iClub Central. And then when iClub Central and Better Investing came back together in 2009, now the Investor Advisory Service is back under the Better Investing umbrella. But the newsletter was always positioned as One, it's for people who like this SSG thing, but think it's too complicated or don't want to do the work themselves. Well, guess what? Here's three SSGs prepared by professionals with the research to back it up that you can depend on in the aggregate over time. And the small cap informer is the same thing. There was a need. People, Better Investing says we should invest in small company stocks, but they never focus on them in the magazine. Where do we find them? And when we do find them, they're hard to analyze. So we created the Small Cap Informer newsletter to support that need. And so again, the idea is you might like to do SSGs and do research, but you find it harder to research smaller companies. And so here is a tool for you to take advantage of to give you those ideas. And in terms of the prices of the subscriptions, they're really modest compared to what sometimes I see how much it costs, you know, to pay for Jim Cramer's services. And it's amazing how much they ask and what you get in return doesn't seem to be as clear cut a value as what we provide in our tools. And it's because we're part of this nonprofit effort that we're able to do it, that we're not, if it was a standalone business or a financial advisor doing it, yeah, that's a different matter. But because we're part of Better Investing, we're trying to do good, we're trying to do well, we're trying to do them both at the same time. Fortunately, the numbers back up the talk, which is very gratifying.
There was a quick question about the book you wrote. Well, I mean, there were a few, but if you can list them, Armchair Millionaire,
yeah,
you co-wrote.
I think they're all, everything is out of print at this point, but I wrote a book called The Armchair Millionaire, which is a great five-step tool to finding financial freedom. That principles like paying yourself first, right? It's great for some young person who wants to understand the basics. Pay yourself first, use your 401k, your IRA options, max those out, first of all, and then invest according to a strategy of using three index funds, small cap, large cap, and international. And that's what I do in my 401k. And I rebalance every other year or so. You know, it's just don't sweat it. So that's been very successful for me. I wrote Investment Clubs for Dummies, which many people are familiar with in the Better Investing community because of Investment Clubs. It had the misfortune of being published in 2001, so right before the financial crash, and the Dummies folks, you know, pulled everything that was financial related. They thought nothing was going to sell anymore related to investing books. The Complete Idiot's Guide to Online Investing was my first book, was my second book. Back in the 1990s. Yeah, so I've written a Dummies and an Idiot's Guide. My brother says I'm the perfect person for that job. I don't think he means it as a compliment, though. But to me, it's perfect. This is what I want to do. I want to help people. Those books are great at doing that, helping you understand it, not using a lot of jargon, not trying to impress you with my knowledge. That's not what I want. What I want is for you to take away some bit of information that you will be able to utilize in a practical way to improve your own portfolio. And if that means don't invest in stocks directly and invest in index funds, I'm fine with that as well. Nobody's saying that you have to be investing in stocks in order to be successful in the market. You could be buying ETFs. I would caution anybody to invest in cryptocurrency or meme stocks unless you really have an understanding of it, unless you isolate that portion of your investable assets to limit the downside. That's what I see when you go online these days in some of the forums where people are talking about stocks. And they're disconnected from the business of what those companies do. And to me, that's first and foremost. I look at companies and I think, oh, this is great. This is something I can really understand. I get it. We covered a company called Medifast, ticker is MED, and they are a health-related, fitness-related, diet-related company that works with coaches who are prior clients who work directly with people to devise a diet plan for them, a fitness plan, help them stay accountable. And coming into the pandemic, people weren't going to gyms, so this was a viable alternative. They've done very well. Their growth rate has slowed from the, 70, 80% a year that it was growing at. And so Wall Street's kind of soured on them a little bit. But now we're coming out of the pandemic and people who've been sitting at home eating junk food all day are going, I guess maybe now it's time to start working on getting those pounds off again. So it's the timing is right from that perspective, but it's a company that I think has got a long trajectory ahead, regardless of what Wall Street thinks at this point or at that point. And the fundamentals hold it out to be true. But if you're going to expect it to grow at 60% a year, you're going to be disappointed. If you think it'll grow at least 15% a year, and that should be doable, and we can buy it at a PE where it's in the low single double digits, then let's go for it. And those are fun opportunities for me. They don't always work out, but nothing ever does.
I'm listening to a lot of Annie Duke now. And I'm even just started today thinking in bets, but for the past 2 weeks, I've been listening to a lot of her on different podcasts, learning about, how to acknowledge uncertainty in your decision making, how to make the implicit explicit. And so it's really been helping with, I think, strengthening and sharpening my decision-making skills.
Mm-hmm.
And this one concept about resulting, which is separating the strength of the decision and the process of making a decision with the result. Because there's always like that 2%, 2% really comes from when there was that interception with the Seattle Seahawks. But the fact that it was intercepted, the probability of that was only 2% of the time.
Right.
And so it was a great decision, even though the result went off. And that is reminding me of, I don't think it's a rule, but it's definitely one of those colloquialisms within better investing, which is the rule of five, as long as you have the fundamental of how do I make sound investment, long-term decisions, 80% of the time you're going to hit it out the park,
yeah,
if not be successful. And some may drop, but 80% odds is still odds. And just because one didn't make it didn't mean that it wasn't a good decision. So,
yeah, I agree. Last year we did look at all of the small cap Informer stock picks because we started tracking those from when we started the newsletter. So I was able to categorize and how many worked out, how many didn't work out. And it's pretty surprising how one, we learned some lessons, and two, sometimes the companies didn't work out, and we're always torn when we talk about it. Do we try to figure out how to protect on the downside? Should we be working on strategies to exit when things aren't working out? Or do we just let it ride and you kind of roll with it? And but the risk is that you've got that one person who was like, this is a great idea, and puts half their portfolio in it. And that's the one stock that goes down 50%. And now they're very, very displeased. They are so displeased with their subscription. But in the aggregate, so what do we tell people? Remember the long term. You probably look at your portfolio too frequently once it's set. It's really like it's the set it, forget it model. You should be not having to make tweaks on a constant basis, but making those high quality selections, let your winners ride over time, deal with the companies that are not working out, and move on, and try to find those opportunities, to use that capital to invest in the next great idea. And when you do it and you keep repeating it over time, that's where the success really comes in. It's the repetition of years and years and years and years and decades and decades. And before you know it, you've got situations like the classic Better Investing member who was, a preacher, never made very much money and retired a millionaire, right? Because he invested the little money he had according to Better Investing's principles. I remember the founders of Better Investing, Tom O'Hara. He used to talk about that story a lot. He just loved that story. That was a great story. How do you serve God and yet retire a millionaire and not be dependent on the church pension. Those are great stories, but it takes time. But everybody's got that time. You're 50. You still got the time. Put it to work. Start working now. And if you're 30, if you're 20, boy, the sky's the limit. As long as you don't fall in with the people who are trading the meme stocks and trying to generate short-term gains. And you know, it's heartbreaking to see those situations where people get a margin call for $25,000 and they're like, they only invested $5,000 and they don't understand what did they do to put them in that position. Yeah, that's, you didn't understand. That's why you got into that position. And our approach is just buying good companies. Buy good products. Anyway.
Last question, so we close out. What's kept you with Better Investing for 25 years and possibly with good health, we could keep you for another 25 years?
Yes. It's been what a long, strange journey it has been, my career, but to have carved out a particular niche. What else would I do? Where else could I go? Be creative, try to come up with concepts, help people on a regular basis. If I went to work for another brokerage firm, I mentioned working at an investment bank where we were developing an online brokerage business, and the inside joke was all of the content essentially had to have a click to buy now link. For stocks. So the objective really is not to provide education, but to provide actionable advice that would drive people to make transactions so that the business would make money, right? And so we never made it far enough to delineate where's that wall going to be. So if I went off into some sort of other commercial company in the sector, I would not be an educator. It's very hard to be a pure educator. And yes, they do exist. But for the most part, you end up being a pundit. You end up being someone who's developing content pieces that are supporting a business objective. And at Better Investing, the business objective is to be better investors, right? That's it. And even the for-profit subsidiary that we work at, that's the overarching theme. Yes. We want the newsletters, the software tools should be profitable. They are profitable, and they will be as long as Better Investing exists as an organization. The structure of the business, the way it's put together, that's how it's going to be. But there's nowhere else that I could do that. Maybe I could work for another media company, but then where you're publishing content on a website. But that's the grind of being, you know, an on the beat reporter, and you're doing the same thing just day in, day out. That's not as attractive.
You looked up as a
well.
Writer.
Yeah.
The most satisfied, productive, creative, successful writer I know.
Well, I'm also, you know, I suffer from writer's block, and the deadline, the capital D deadline, and it's getting closer and closer, and finally it's so close that I can't ignore it anymore. I can't watch videos on YouTube anymore. Now I've got to sit down and buckle under, and then boom, the magic happens, right? So I struggle with that after all these years. So you've got these flashes of pseudo brilliance surrounded by a lot of time, of mental time, processing and figuring it out and absorbing and making notes, you know, constantly writing notes in little notebooks and slips of paper, things to do, ideas. Oh, look at this. Ask Ione about when the last time she went for a run, you know. So all this kind of information falls in. So yeah, I'm very happy with my career trajectory. I'm very happy with the people at Better Investing that I met along the way, including your mom, other great people in the Southeast Florida chapter and the volunteers, you know, I see Ann and Bob and Howard in the chat, who, you know, years and years and years and years. And it's so fun. I miss the national events, the conferences, because it's like old home week. You walk in and these people that you've seen every year for a decade or more. There they are. How you doing? How's it been? What's new? What's happening? Then, you know, you always pause and take a moment for the people that we've lost along the way. And that list keeps getting longer the older you get as well. So I feel very fortunate in the position that I'm in, and I'm looking forward to the next chapter of my personal life. We're making plans to travel full time while I continue to work, and we're going to be all over the country and explore while the hips and the knees are still willing.
In place.
So, yeah, and that's been made possible by this career trajectory that I've taken, and so there's still more. There's another chapter that's going to come sooner rather than later.
Right, right. Well, you've always been an inspiration, Doug. Thank you for first, before being a friend, being a laughing buddy.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Every time we get together, I don't think we can last 60 seconds without going at it.
I always look forward to it. But you know, thank you for what you're doing too, in broadening the reach of Better Investing to that demographic, that mysterious demographic of people under 30, which I know nothing about anymore. Reaching into other communities. You know, I appreciate the work that you do. I know a lot of other people do as well. And so you deserve a lot of credit for that. And your mom as well she's a legend in her own time for sure. But that just makes it all the more pleasing for me to be here with you tonight and to talk and to help demystify a little bit this complicated thing called investing and encourage people who are wondering what it's all about. Yeah, you can do it. You can figure it out. You can make it happen, and it will make a difference.
Yeah, it will. And don't underestimate the small steps, because those small steps will make a huge, it'll change your whole world. Trust
Absolutely.
Me. Try it out. Try it out and let us know. So people can reach you at myiclub.com.
Yeah, iclub.com. There's a blog there where I post commentary pretty regularly, but you can find out everything we're doing on there. We're also on Facebook. You know, all of our newsletters and tools have a presence on Facebook and social media. You can find us there, and hopefully more events. In live and in person in 2022.
We're getting back to that. Yeah. And even before the live event, you all do a monthly webinar. If you're in an investment club, please check out iClub.com because, you know, the tools and the software and the support your whole team provides, you know, really helps people all throughout the year, not just in the crunch of the tax season. So.
Right.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Great. Thank you, Ione.
Okay. Everybody have a great night.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.